Hi, this is Lisa Nichols, and you're listening to David Wood on the Kick-Ass Life Show.
Want to make your life better?
This is the Kick-Ass Life Podcast with David Wood.
So I am so excited this morning because I get to chat to someone that I've fallen in love with. I fall in love with this guy. We met, and it's like meeting a brother from another mother. And I just want to invite you and welcome you to the call, Mike Dooley. Hello and welcome.
Brother David, it's so good to be in your company again. And I have to tell you, I love you just as much, if not more.
I love you this much. Can you see how wide my arms are?
Whoa. Thank you.
Hey, so, you know, we chat all the time. And the last time we chatted, we were standing on a beach in Hawaii watching a turtle. Well, maybe that wasn't the last time, but that was one time of memory. And we went for that big, big long walk where we got lost along this sort of winding pathway in the dark. And we always said I end up chatting for hours. And I always feel like I've just come home. So I'm really excited to sort of share our friendship in this way. But there's some things I haven't asked you that I'm fascinated by. And I know that most people know you through the Notes from the Universe. And we'll get to that in a little bit.
Right.
But I want to go back to when you were this young boy. You had this fascination with life that was quite remarkable. You started asking questions and started feeling things at such a young age. And I know that at 14, you kind of got into hypnosis and you started doing these kind of things with your friends where you make their fingers go numb and all this kind of stuff. But when did you start these questions? Was it around 14 or was it younger that you started asking these big questions of life?
You know, I have to just kind of guess. I think between 12 and 14, I used to go to church on Sundays, you know, when I used to belong to a religion, which I don't do either anymore. And, that was the one time of the week where I guess some people are getting or thinking they're getting spiritual. And I would get a little bit philosophical, even as a boy in the pews, you know, because the stuff didn't always resonate. It didn't always empower, and oftentimes it was the other direction, you know, it made us feel less or made us feel bad, and so questions would come, like, why? And I remember some of my first thoughts in that 12, 13, 14-year-old range was like, you know, Mom, you know, everyone has to be God, you know, if we're not God, what are we made of? And surely everyone must go to heaven, because why would... If anybody did something wrong, and I still believe this to this day, it would always be through not knowing any better, through ignorance, naivety, not through base evil. And certainly people do evil things, and there's a lot of pain in the world. But it would only be because they didn't have the kind of parents I had. They didn't have the kind of direction I had. They didn't have the kind of love that I had. And certainly God would be big enough to see that and not punish them for eternity because, you know, I mean, and we're not even talking about major sins here. We're talking about, you know, not recognizing Jesus as your Savior. That, to many people, is grounds for eternal damnation. It's like, are you kidding me? And as a kid, and I don't want to offend your listeners now, but I think most people have asked these questions and drew their own conclusions that were the same as mine. And so those questions snowballed, and they got, you know, more relative to living deliberately. And then I was playing competitive junior national tennis, and Mom got me Psycho-Cybernetics and the Inner Game of Tennis. And so I kind of had this vault of conclusions that, you know, life is beautiful and we are powerful, that were finally confirmed at around 18, 19 when I read the Seth material. And it's been downhill in a good way ever since my questions were answered. And now it's a matter of applying them to my own rocking life.
You know, I think about this young boy asking these deep questions. And I think about your mom. that your mom must have been a remarkable woman to allow you to propagate these thoughts and keep having them and expand them. What was your mom like, and how did she play out in this whole ability for you to allow the mind to grow like yours has done?
Well, thanks for that. And mom's still alive and well, I gotta say. We have always had an extraordinarily close relationship. I'm embarrassed to admit that because I don't want anybody to think I'm a mama's boy. I'm not. But she, I don't know that it was any supernatural parenting or love skills of hers, but there was certainly as close to unconditional love as possible. And I think humans are virtually incapable of true unconditional love. And there was also a permissiveness allowed for my wandering mind. But I ought to point out that my wandering mind wasn't saying, hey, we ought to be able to get away with this, or can't we get away with that? I think all of our wandering minds, and this speaks to our innate goodness as creatures and spiritual beings, tend to go towards beauty and to love and to concepts that empower us. So while the church may not have liked some of the questions or conclusions I drew, a loving parent would, you quite frankly, not see the harm in it, unless they were so extreme that they were blinded by their own allegiance to dogma. So mom was not blinded. She did love me. And she allowed me to kind of have these, wandering musings that she really couldn't answer or speak to. I don't remember her. I don't remember her replies, actually. But I do remember I wasn't shut down, and that maybe says a lot.
Now, if we look at society, though, and the fact that you people around you were going to church on Sundays and everything else, and was there people around you where you felt you couldn't express these things, or you couldn't ask those questions? Did you find that you had to hide some of it away from some people, or were you just speaking to everyone about it, and some people got weirded out by it, and some people were really drawn to it? What was going on for you as far as, your friends and other adults in your life?
Well, I've always been pretty fortunate in that by the time I discovered the Seth material that my mother had sent me, and we both thought the source was outrageous, supposedly someone in a channeled state bringing forth a disincarnated being, we were scandalized, but the message was powerful and beautiful and objective and no agenda whatsoever. So I've always had mom that I could talk to, my brother and sister that I could talk to a degree my father, although he's of a different cut. And I had one best friend as a boy from that age forward, and he and I would just, tear into these things that we were hearing from the religious that just were just so seemingly and actually preposterous. So I've always had that outlet, but more, I think, and you flatter me with these questions, so thank you, Brother David, but as if my answers matter. But I've always kind of had a dual track in my mind. One track is, what's the answer? Why are we here? Who am I? What's going on? But the other track is, much bolder and bigger, and it's like, okay, let's use this stuff. My focus hasn't been, what's the truth? Now let me share it. Who can I talk to about this? Let's have a club. Let's get to, So I haven't, because I had a few outlets, I haven't had a need to share. And even to this day, I'd say half of my, probably close to half of my great friends around the world are not into this stuff, as we might call it. They would consider me woo-woo. So I don't go there. I don't go there at all. It's hard to hide it because they know of my work. But we don't go there. And my life is more, and always has been since discovering this stuff, about applying it. I applied it at the University of Florida. I applied it to avert getting fired at PricewaterhouseCoopers. And then my career took off. I applied it when I became an entrepreneur 20 years ago. I've been applying it ever since. I've applied it to this career I now term teacher. But for the last 12 years, I've been writing and speaking about the nature of reality. And I use this stuff. Not only do I share it as content, but to reach farther, to run faster, to jump higher, as you know, and it's the same for you. We travel the world, talking about what fascinates us, the mechanics of reality. And I think I've gotten to this place, as have you, by applying this stuff. So that's the biggest focus in my life, apart from teaching. It's actually living fuller, finding greater happiness.
You know, one of the things I deal with a lot is when I'm in front of a room and there's people from all different faiths and walks of life and belief systems, I have this sense sometimes and the need to sort of give everyone permission to sort of change words while they're in the ether. So if I use the word universe, they can turn it to God or Buddha or Allah or into whatever they believe is their own faith. Why do you think people get scared? Like with someone like you, you use the word woo-woo, or if you start really challenging a belief system, why is it that people who are embedded, do you think, in their beliefs, you know, tend to turn away instead of really listening with an open heart just to sort of discover what you're talking about? Why does some turn away and say that's just hogwash without really hearing? What's that all about, do you think?
Well, lightly, you know, it's the old fear of the unknown, but more pointedly, and particularly true in my case, raised not only Christian, but Catholic. We were told that if we go there in our thoughts, words, and deeds, this is sinful, you know, that you can't even speculate, doubt, or question these things. This is God. This is authority. This is why you're here. His son died for you. How dare you do that? So I think, you know, we were told flat out, you will have hell to pay if you wander from the line. I can tell you I was, and not by my parents, but by the church. This is just, this is how people were controlled. And I think it's the same in many religions. I'm not fluent in all of them, but I won't name any now. But if you stray from your religion, woe is me. You know, you're going to be not only excommunicated, but perhaps killed and murdered with a bounty on your head. And that's how entrenched we almost all are at these primitive times that we're alive. I tell my audiences, you know, it's as if we've just crawled out of the caves, spiritually speaking. We're in the height of naivety right now, the height of ignorance. Yet the great news is, in spite of our ignorance and naivety, we've still achieved so much individually and as a society and as a world. Our nature is inclined to cooperate, and personally and privately, as I like to share with all audiences, we have this inclination, this bent towards success, peace, harmony, happiness, and truth, and our lives are proof of it. So when people finally emerge and open their mind, they're actually carried along. They don't have to retrace their tracks or repent or undo 10 or 20 or 50 years of brainwash. And one more point on that, the proof of my statement just there that we are inclined to succeed towards prosperity, happiness, peace, health is our own lives, because every one of your listeners has smiled more than they've frowned, have laughed more than they've cried, have been healthy more than they've been sick, have had clarity more than they've been confused, have had friends more than they've been alone, have had money more than they've been broke, evidencing our inclination to succeed even in these confusing times where we've been admonished not to ask the hard questions. So my follow-up point is, ask the hard questions. They have easy answers. Only connect the dots you need to connect, and you will reveal that life is beautiful, that we are powerful, and that you have an inclination to succeed, making our positive thoughts at least, and this is an arbitrary number, at least 10,000 times more powerful than our negative thoughts, if not 100,000 times. And my life bears this out. Every crisis I've been in has borne this out. You know, do what you can with what you've got. Try to visualize, show up, act with faith, no matter how things are appearing, and the darkness lifts, and you'll look back at that crisis you were in, and you will wonder, how could I have thought it was so bad? How could I have been so scared?
You know, this, I love what you're saying here. And I want to stay on the religious thing for a second. And then we've got lots of things we want to talk about. Only because, again, I watch this confusion with people. I mean, you know, I've traveled all over the world like you, you know, and I see the differences often keeping us apart as opposed to bringing us together. And when you use the word, if you said, I'm not religious, and someone on, everyone's got this term, yet you, when I watch you and I've spent time with you and I see how beautifully you live, I see how beautifully you treat people, I see how beautiful the thoughts are in your head and how, like you just spoke just then, the goodness that oozes out of every cell in your body in every waking moment. And I know you have your crap and you have those other things go on, but there's still this, there's this thing about you is that you're the walking testimony of good. And I see that. Yet there's this language, Barry, you say, well, I'm not religious. Yet you talk about God and being, you know, you use the word God as, you know, God is every fiber of our being. What does that mean to be not religious, yet to be such a great human being and still walk this path and yet still use the word God? How does that sort out my confusion here?
Yeah, no, I love it. Thank you. And thanks for all the kind things that you said. And by the way, I don't have my shit. I don't have my bad stuff. I mean, I have my moods. I am so mortal. You do know that. But, you know, life does get easier when you start walking in the light. And when I say walk in the light, I am not talking about being selfless. I'm talking about knowing what the truth is, that we are divine, that we are the eyes and the ears of God. And to answer your question, I think this is what 2012 is all about. It's so exciting because we're moving into this age of spirituality without religion, just like on the dating websites. You know, what's your faith? Spiritual, not religious. I mean, that's bullseye. I don't think those two terms go together very well, spirituality and religion. Spirituality is an openness, is a reverence, is a recognition that there's more than the physical senses can perceive without necessarily saying what that more is, as opposed to religion, which is usually a basket full of rules, of selflessness, of not honoring life, but honoring God, not honoring yourself, but honoring others. How can you honor others if you can't honor yourself? So I view myself as, I'd like to view myself as spiritual as a human being could get, but without an ounce of religion. And I think then the shackles fall off, the possibilities present themselves. My definition of spirituality is a recognition that there's more, that there's divine intelligence, and any statement beyond that must either reveal life's beauty or our power, or I reject it. And further, it cannot be exclusionary. Virtually every religion, by its mere definition, is us or them. You're either with us because you believe X, Y, and Z, or I'm sorry, you're on the outside, hell, fire, and brimstone for eternity until you wake up to the obvious truth that we are right. You know, spirituality excludes no one. You know, I don't care, and I know you don't care what anybody else is thinking or doing. You love them. You allow them to be themselves. That's spirituality, and there's a recognition that there's purpose to everything, and you don't have to know what that purpose is. You know, and I talk a lot to my audiences about connecting dots and using Occam's razor. The beauty here is you don't have to connect more dots than are necessary to have traction. You know, connect the dot that life is beautiful, that there's a purpose, that there's divine intelligence. I mean, the opposite of that is that life is random. You know, that's insanity. You know, even Einstein, the ultimate scientist, didn't think that life was random. He said everything's either a miracle or it's not. And it's pretty clear that he's not saying that life is not a miracle. So anyway, connect the dots that you need and don't go connecting dots that you can't connect, because then you do create a religion. Now you've got no legs under the table. You've got hypotheses that felt right because they resonated with one person on a certain day, but not to the masses. Only connect the dots you need, which are very, very few indeed, and you've got power, clarity, and you can begin seeking and enjoying happiness.
So I want to talk about that person who's listening, hopefully still listening right now, because obviously, you know, with someone starts speaking as you are, and there's a chance that they can confuse what you're saying. And I want to clear up that confusion. Someone who is religious or puts that label on themselves, I'm religious, can also be spiritual. Could they do both? Is there a possibility that someone can say, hey, I've been religious. I'm living under this kind of house where I have been, all those things you just mentioned, but I'm starting to awaken to this spirituality where I can be more of. I can still practice this faith that's been in my generations. You're not saying that they have to necessarily walk away from that. You're saying, hey, you know, there's a definition difference here, but actual spirituality in your world, in your definition, is all-encompassing, and it's simple. It brings out the mystery of life and the wonder of life in every moment. Am I getting this, or am I missing a point here?
Yes, and I thank you for maybe tempering me a little bit, because I'm just giving hardcore, deepest views here that I personally do ascribe to. But of course, every religion was founded on beauty, and every religion was founded on the premise that there is more to life than what our physical senses has picked up. But I'm not aware of any religious tomes that don't have a lot of scary stuff in them. So, and I think that when I was religious, if I could ever say I was, I mean, I was in church every Sunday. I went to catechism. I was confirmed. You know, very typical American religious, if you will. I still left room kind of in my heart for the tricky areas of the Bible, just to say that, you know, I don't quite know what they were saying there, but, you know, but life is beautiful and we are powerful and God understands me. Now, that does totally deviate from the Bible, but I think that's where most people who are religious already are. But to answer your question, yes, you can need not leave the comfort and beauty of what you feel in a religious environment to simultaneously begin entertaining an even grander, greater love for all humanity and your own power.
Mm. Great. Well, as we leave that subject, because I love it, and you and I could talk about this for weeks. I know that, but I'm going to have you back. We're going to chat lots and lots more. I want to get back to this guy now. You've gone through school. You've asked these questions. You end up as a tax accountant. How did that happen?
You know, that's actually the most woo-woo career I ever had in my definition of woo-woo. But how did I get there? Well, you know, like I said. Well, when I started finding answers, they excited me. I could be a better tennis player, better student, better professional, better human being, live life more deliberately on my terms, which would spill into the lives of others, et cetera. So it was all about application. It never dawned on me in a million years that I would be a teacher of any of this kind of stuff. It was just to be an entrepreneur. And to find my own happiness vis-a-vis my own business one day. So I got into accounting for perhaps the most conventional reasons, to get a good business background so that I could eventually leave the profession knowing, debits and credits and reporting and all of that stuff, and be well-versed in all that I needed to business-wise to be some type of other entrepreneur. And so that's what I did. And then I got a job with Price Waterhouse, kind of hated it, kind of didn't do well very well in the beginning, got transferred to the tax department, assigned to the Middle East, which was a dream come true. Not the Middle East so much, but all that came from it. I was based in Riyadh. I worked in Cairo many, many months on end. I traveled throughout Africa, Asia, the Far East, the South Seas, had a huge hardship bonus. Came home to the United States 18 months later with a lot more money, bought a condo in Boston, my first choice. So I stayed way longer than I thought I would, but it was because, you know, there was one more carrot on the end of the stick. And finally, it was just like, you know, enough. This is so not who I am. I was shocked that nobody saw how valuable I could be to them and hire me away. So I just quit one day. Well, there was a lot of energy leading up to me quitting, just a lot of dissatisfaction. Not with the firm or the people, but just, you know, the underlying core of what I did. I just so didn't care that I finally, I made the promotion to manager. That was a milestone. Somebody offered to buy my condo in Boston. I sold it for a great price. And I was like, that's it. That's my chance. I'm going to leap without knowing what would come next. And so I did. And that was 20 odd years ago. And I moved to Orlando.
So this is great. You've moved out of this world. And now when I look at your life, there's almost a half a million people, or close to a half a million, I don't know the exact number, who receive your notes from the universe every day, some of us. And I know I subscribe, and I think I get them 3 days a week. And, you know, but there's 182 countries that are people from all these different languages, all these different backgrounds, all these different thought patterns that are subscribing to these thoughts. You know, you end up on The Secret, which is this big phenomenon. You end up, you know, publishing these best-selling books. And so how do we get from then this tax accountant who realizes this isn't my path to what you're enjoying today? And I know that's a big gap, but I wonder this idea then of the transition, because I think a lot of people in this day and age, in this moment in time, this moment of history, are feeling this stirring inside of them that they want change. They want to live their full life purpose. They want, they're called to something more important. And yet you had that opportunity and you stepped into something that you never thought would occur and are living this life now and touching so many people around the world. How did that happen for you?
Well, half intentionally, half accidentally. After Price Waterhouse, as you know, I sold T-shirts for a living from a startup company that had a very slow start with my mother and brother. And then we sold a boatload of them over 10 years. And then that wound down somewhat against our wills. It was no fun. We ended up liquidating, pennies on the dollar, but I still had cash. And that was just 12 years ago. And so I was faced again with complete career change, starting over literally 12 years ago. And the way I got from that rock bottom, which was my life's rock bottom, to where I am now, which is as good as you said and more, was really I applied this stuff that I have been teaching. And that is, if you want change, have an end result. Define what you want in terms of the end result, meaning don't worry about the hows. I could never have figured out the hows of the path that led me to this, not in a billion years, from debits and credits in Boston, Massachusetts, to selling T-shirts on a sidewalk in Orlando, to eventually writing notes from the universe to what you said is correct, almost a half a million people every day, and touring as a teacher on the nature of reality. It's like boggles the mind. And it's one of my biggest messages, don't worry about the hows. But that doesn't mean don't take action. Then the question arises, how do you not mess with the hows, but take lots of massive action? Well, you've got your dreams in terms of end results. And I advocate, you know, in my books, why I think end results should be generally stated. Abundance instead of $1 million. Great relationships instead of Trixie by December 31. You know, let your end results be general. This way, the universe can find the shortest, quickest way, and you're not encumbered in unimportant details, because all details are unimportant. And then every day you do stuff. And the way you do stuff without messing with the cursed house is totally in how you view what you do. Don't do something and say, this is going to be my ticket, by golly. I'm going to sell X number of homes. I'm going to write a New York Times bestseller. I'm going to be a speaker. I never claimed any of those things, but I wrote to the best of my ability. I spoke to the best of my ability, but turned it over to life's magic, aka the universe, aka my greater self, to connect those dots. So you show up, you know, early, stay late, not in the sense of, you know, working massive hours, but just working smart, making yourself available like a lightning rod to life's magic by networking, by mingling, by asking for help, by trying websites, by trying affiliate marketing, by trying Toastmasters, as was my trail, by speaking at Rotary Clubs, speaking at Unity Churches, you know, and all of a sudden you're going to start seeing where it feels good and you're getting a good reception, and you're going to feel where it feels lousy and you're getting a poor reception. But because you've got so many sticks in the fire and you're knocking on so many different doors, you're automatically navigating in and out of invisible limiting beliefs. You don't have to know what they are. Just keep trying different things. And where things work and you get progress, all of a sudden you move beyond those invisible limiting beliefs, if they were even there, and they no longer make sense in light of your newfound success, happiness, breakthroughs, and they disappear. You know, I know I'm giving you the Reader's Digest micro version of this. All of it I elaborate on in my works, even in little pieces in the Notes from the Universe. I talk about end results. I talk about cursed hows. It basically is really simple. Just have your dreams and show up every single day and prepare to be astounded.
You know, let's talk about the notes for a second, because I think they do fit in right here. You know, what I found with your notes, I mentioned just before the call, we spoke for just a minute or two before the call, and or the show. I'm going to call it a show. I like the show better than the call. It sounds so different. Call. Welcome to the show, Mike Dooley. Anyway, I said that the first thing I read this morning was, you know, it's from the universe. You know, there's lots of emails in my inbox, but I choose not to read any of those until I'm awake. But I find the notes have this wonderful way of bringing my awareness to things of, normally I focus on gratitude. When I first open my eyes, the first thing as I cuddle my honey, I'll mention, you know, what are you grateful for this morning? We'll talk about gratitudes and get our mind focused on the things that we're grateful for. One of your notes, and they always have my name on, which I love. I love the technology you use because I feel so personal. And of course, when someone signs up for the notes, they get to answer a few questions. So that it's deeply personal. It's not just this random thing. And I can't tell you how many people I know who received the notes and have been receiving them for 4 or 5 years and are saying to me, wow, I almost feel like, you know, Mike's talking to me personally every time I read one. And here's a great one. It says, hey, David, do you know how many angels hey, David, do you know how many angels you have? And there's this like ... All of them. They insisted. The universe. And just that I know that's probably one of the more short, popular ones. But can you share a couple of your faves? I mean, some of them are quite long, some are short, but some of the longer ones that you love personally?
Well, thanks for asking and all of those good vibes. One that comes to mind right away, it takes a little getting. The coin will have to drop after I'm done telling it. I'll warn you right now. But the question is something to the effect of, do you know, David, what happens in the physical world in time and space right before a really huge dream comes true? Absolutely nothing. So if perchance right now in your life, absolutely nothing is happening, consider it a sign. And that speaks to...
I love it. I love it.
Enough of my own. That's like, oh my God, am I arrogant or what? I don't know. But sometimes when I write these, and usually it's after grinding them out for hours, literally. So no, I do not channel these as some folks channel. But that one comes from one of my most important lessons, and that is don't judge the world around you with your physical senses, because your physical senses can't see the miracles. Your physical senses cannot see 99.9999% of reality. Our physical senses only show us what we're now manifesting in the instant. That holds no bearing on what you're going to manifest tomorrow, nor does it reveal that perhaps the tipping point has been reached already towards living the life of your own wild dreams. Yet if you based your conclusions only on what you could see, you'd have to draw the conclusion that, hey, nothing's happening. It looks just like yesterday. If you're traveling across the Atlantic on the Queen Elizabeth or the Queen Mary, you know, after 3 or 4 days, it's still the same view. It's just ocean on the horizon. That doesn't mean you're not, you know, 6 hours away from land sight. You are. It does work. This stuff always works. I use the analogy for GPS navigation in cars because people get that. Number one, you can't have a new adventure without an end result. Got to have an end result. Number two, the car is not going to start speaking instructions to you until you put it in gear. If you don't put your car in gear, the thing is wired not to help you, because you're unintentionally perhaps saying, I'm not ready, if your car is in park. You can't go in the wrong direction. Put your car in gear and go, even if you don't know how to get there. Of course you don't know how to get there. That's why you're using GPS navigation. You go in the wrong way, you will hear, make a legal U-turn. Guidance is forthcoming once you're in action, and this is true in life. Have an end result, show up every day, you'll get a new best friend, you'll sit next to somebody on the plane, you'll meet them at the mall, serendipitously, the right people will come into your life. The wrong people will be removed. To the physical senses, at a glance, it might seem for a long while that nothing's happening, but stuff is always happening. And don't draw conclusions again with your physical senses, because you could be 3 hours into a journey to a town or to a new best friend's home that you've never been to before. 2 hours and 58 minutes into the journey, everything still looks weird. You've never been on these roads before. You don't see your friend. Don't draw the conclusion that it's not working for you, that you've got invisible limiting beliefs, that it works for everyone but you. I think I'll go home and watch The Secret again. It's like, no, it was working for you. It is your listeners. It's working for you right now. Every day you get closer. Every day it gets easier. Let those be your modus operandi. Just because you can't see it doesn't mean it's not working. It is. People draw the conclusion, well, it must be something wrong with me. Well, there wasn't, but now there is, because you drew that conclusion, and they start bad-mouthing themselves. This is the show-up part. You don't show up once, twice. You keep showing up until you have it. You know, and it might take 2 years. I'm 12 years into this journey now, and it was years into this journey before there was a really bright light at the end of the tunnel. Now there's now it's all light, and it's such a different reality. But if I hadn't hung in there in spite of appearances, and really it was out of desperation, you know, I would be like so many people who drew conclusions. Well, it must be my karma, or it must be an ancient spiritual contract, or I must not believe I'm worthy. It's like, oh, garbage. You're powerful. You're not broken. Have a dream. Keep showing up.
You know, that's one of your philosophies, which I think is probably well known and best known for the people that know you. And I was actually thinking as you were sharing that, how when we met and when we sat next to each other, I had no idea who you were. I'd never read any of your work. I'd never subscribed to the Notes from the Universe. And we just had this wonderful kind of relationship sort of percolating. And then I remember coming to one event, you'd invited me and I flew over to one event and I'm sitting there and you said, who in the room has subscribed to the Notes from the Universe? And everyone put their hand up except me. And I'm thinking, oh, you know, maybe there's something here. I should be like, maybe the universe is talking to me right now and I should go home and get this stuff and actually listen to my friend instead of just yakking to him on the beach, you know? But one of your big comments, which I think, you know, I want you to explain in a little bit more depth, this idea that thoughts become things. And, and I think it's the thing that, you know, just based on what you just said, you know, I love the action piece. I love the GPS analogy that, you know, until you stick it in gear, there ain't no instructions coming. And I get that fully. But this thought becomes things, this interruption of the flow of the universe with thoughts that sort of derail us and we start to question everything. And then when we start to question it, we kind of pull ourselves back, you know, we take it out of gear. We take the car out of gear and we turn it off, right? Can you talk a little bit more about how did you come with this philosophy and what does it really mean in detail, thoughts become things?
Well, the first time those three words were combined by me, and I had not seen them and still not aware of anybody else combining them, but I certainly won't claim that they haven't, was when I was writing a t-shirt. Our t-shirts used to have little poems on life, dreams, and happiness. And I wrote this one that was killing me. It was like 4 days and I couldn't get this poem down. And in all the words I had written something about, you know, because your thoughts become things. And I was like, wow. And I stood back. It's like those three words, like no other three words perhaps in any language, sum up the entirety of what's going on in the jungles of time and space. It's not a sometimes thing. It's an all the time thing. Our thoughts literally become the things and events of our lives. So I trashed like a week's worth of notes on this poem. And I just wrote, warning, thoughts become things. Choose the good ones. And it was a very good selling t-shirt of ours because people, I think, instinctively resonate with the truth. Although it always irks me when people think that I'm talking about positive thinking, because no, I mean it literally. Everything is thought. We just perceive it to be real. I mean, I think mainstream scientists have proven that, you know, a table or a rock is not solid. If you get small enough, you could go straight on through it. And then there's other modern mainstream sciences that talk about, you know, the vibration of it. Einstein told us all it's relative, different from one person to the next. That's the same as saying it's illusionary. We live in a hologram world. What we share is a co-creation. But when it comes to our own happiness, our own creations, our own life, our own abundance, our own health, our own friendships. That the buck stops with us. You know, that was the nature of the adventure we chose. And here, one of the very few pillars of this reality that is absolutely immovable is that our thoughts literally become the things and events of our lives. They don't do it instantaneously, but, you know, what you think about, you bring about, as a million other people have said. And this is how. Just like in our nighttime dreams, there's the best analogy. You know, we all have a dream or two that we can remember. And I know some people in my audiences tell me they're very challenged that way. They don't remember their dreams, but you know what I'm talking about. You know, there's people in our nighttime dreams. There's challenges. There's whatever there is stuff that's like time and space. There's objects. There's space. There's matter. There's arguments. But no one would disagree that somebody watching someone dreaming would realize that that dreamer is making it all up in their mind. It's all thought. And some in the middle of a dream, you'd find that very hard to believe. You'd be like, look, I'm looking at a lion and he's chasing me. Don't tell me that's my thought form. I'm about to die. But it's like, no, you're dreaming. And in the dream, you think it's real. And that's exactly, not metaphorically, not hypothetically, that's exactly what we're now experiencing. Our waking life, the here and now, is a dream. It's pure dream. That doesn't mean it's not important, and that's not to make light of its sacredness, its joyfulness, the celebration and the honor that we all have for being alive. But to answer your question, what do I mean by that? I mean it literally. Our thoughts eventually, think brand new thoughts, they begin morphing our perceptions now, and as we go through the action steps, we give ourselves permission to meet the right person, have the right idea, to where all of a sudden we meet the dream in the flesh. And it seems so real, but it's not. And one thing I'd like to throw in there, if I may, do I have a minute,
absolutely,
David?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Okay. Is that the first thing people feel when they get this stuff is actually a bit of terror, because they're like, yep, it's true. It's true. Oh my God, I had a negative thought last night. Oh my God, I've been worried about getting fired or not losing the weight or my relationship ending and my health. And the great news here, and this goes back to what I was saying earlier about our inclination to succeed, it's not as if all thoughts are equally powerful. It's as if our positive thoughts are 10,000 or 100,000, as I said, times more powerful than our negative thoughts. And I know that that sounds like judgment. It is judgment. A thought's a thought. You know, it's only a person that says this one's powerful, positive, this one's negative, detrimental. But being the eyes and the ears of the divine come alive in the dream of life, as we all are here in time and space, it was from the zenith of our magnificence that we chose to play as who we are now playing as. And it was all with an eye, if you will, to success, to growth, to glory, to expansion of God, him or her, or itself, ourself. And when you think a negative thought, it has to contend with the magnificence that beats your heart right now, that is who you are, the optimism that you don't even give yourself credit for. It doesn't stand much of a chance, our negative thoughts. A positive thought, on the other hand, so-called positive, a thought that is in alignment with the very yearnings that brought us here to discover, expand, and adventure, that goes with the flow. That makes sense. That's the truth. And so it's therefore as if these thoughts that feed the flame of eternity that brought us here, you know, just adds to who we are instantaneously, whereas a negative thought like, I'm dumb, I'm stupid, I'm ugly, I'm fat, those are the lies. Where you are is never who you are. You are infinitely more. And so it is much more difficult for negative thoughts to become things. So while I just said thoughts become things literally, and I mean that with every fiber of my body, I must add that our beautiful, empowering thoughts become things much faster, which again is evidenced in our lives. I'm not just saying stuff because it sounds right. You know, everyone listening has smiled more than frowned, laughed more than cried, had money more than they've been broke. This evidences that we're not in a 50-50 survival mode, a survival of the fittest, as we've been taught to believe from watching the Discovery Channel. It's like, we are, your listeners are inclined to succeed. And when you peel away the dogma and you reveal the truth and our beauty, which is part of the truth, and then you set about applying this stuff by having dreams defined in terms of the end result, and you do seemingly mortal stuff towards them every day, the baby steps just show up. You don't need to meditate. You don't even need to visualize. You don't need yoga. You don't need to become a vegetarian, but I wish you would become a vegetarian. but life is so allowing and so permissive and so encouraging towards our success. It's amazing that people haven't tuned into this truth already. But once you do, you blast forward as you have, as our friends have, as so many people have who don't even know the things that we know. So that's how permissive it is.
I love this. And as we're sort of wrapping up this call here, I just want one question to sort of help me out with. I'm thinking about that person who's sitting here, maybe hearing this for the first time. And they maybe they've got on the place where they're starting to believe that lower self, that negative kind of thought train, and they're sort of looking at what's in their life. And I love what you said, where you are is never who you are. But they're sort of focused on where they're at and sort of giving it meaning, that's who they are, you know. And give us one, what's one thing or a couple of things that someone could do today to sort of start stepping into toward the light, if we want to use a woo-woo term, or towards that sort of connection with the higher self, towards that the revelation of the universe within, that we are a perfect being living, you know, all those great things. What's a couple of things that you would suggest someone do to start? Can you give us a couple of things?
Yes. Well, that brings to mind the story of the prodigal child. So the first message, and I totally cherry pick the Bible or any other book that resonates with me, take what's good, beautiful, and empowering and reject the rest. Even the stuff I say, if it doesn't resonate with you, please, listeners, reject it. But the story of the prodigal child is of the wayward son who turns his back on his inheritance. Yet the day he asks to come home, to the chagrin of his dutiful brother, his father says, absolutely come home. The party begins and his inheritance is restored. That story is telling us that on a dime, you can change your fortune, no matter how much negative talk you've subjected yourself to, no matter how much negative talk loved ones have subjected you to. On a dime, by waking up to the truth, these simple truths that I've been talking about, of life's beauty, your power, your divine heritage, your inheritance is restored. And how do you make advantage of it, take advantage of it, and use it? Let yourself dream a little bit. Be kind to yourself. Forgive yourself. It's easier. It's as easy to do as it is to say to do. And then every day, just show up. And if you are where I was 12 years ago, in spite of my knowledge of all of this stuff, my only choices after liquidating the t-shirt company were sucky ones. I assessed my options. There was sucky, suckier, and suckiest. And as I tell my audiences now, you have no choice. Choose the least sucky and go. The worst, the only choice you could make that is not going to serve you is waiting. So choose from your options. If you've been messing with the hows or the shoulds all of your life, you don't have good options right now. Choose any and shine. Show up early for work, stay late, say yes, have a great attitude, and then ask for help, ask for guidance, knock on doors, do some web searches, launch your company, print the business cards. Just these micro baby steps will begin to turn your entire life around.
Wow. Yeah, I love that. Choose the least sucky one and go. I love it. Mike, as I close this up, I want to ask you to define the show's called The Kick-Ass Life. I wonder if you can say, you know, what does it mean? What does it mean to live a kick-ass life?
To me, it means to know what the truth is, because that's the elixir, the tonic of life. When you know what the truth is, you are free from guilt, you are free from fear, you are free from confusion, and you immediately begin gravitating. Water rises to its own level, and everyone's water out there is to beauty, abundance, and prosperity. You immediately begin gravitating to who you really are. And while at first it might seem like you're totally lost, to live a kick-ass life, you honor who you are, and you honor who emerges as you discover who you are. And then things like abundance and new friends, as when I met you, a milestone in my life. And I mean that with sincerity. It comes automatically. You automatically start getting miracles when you understand. So to live a kick-ass life, you're in the sunshine of truth, and you start following your heart, and it gets easier and easier and better and better. And thanks for the kind things you've said, David. I know it comes from a sincere place, and to tell your listeners, it's reciprocated. I fell in love with David, what was it, about 2 years ago in New Orleans at a conference, and it's like, you know, everyone has friendships like this waiting for them out there, and it's one of the many perks that are waiting for all, as if by design, because you are inclined to succeed.
Mm. Mm. Well, I want to give send my love to Marisol, and I know that you're in the middle of a big move in your life, and I send my love. I know we'll see each other soon, and thank you for being on the show. I really, really appreciate it, and Jen sends a love.
And my love to her and to all of those who are close to you. Thank you, David. We'll do it again.
Okay. Yes, you bet.
That was kick-ass.